Welcome to show 55, New Holland Brewing Company Beer Show. Rick, do you feel the wild turkey bite? Is Jack Black by your side?
Oh, we don't condone drinking and driving.
Not at all. And as we discussed earlier, we hardly encourage drinking and walking.
Yeah.
That's right. Get a designated driver. Enjoy yourself even more. So anyway, we were talking about ZZ Top. They record here in Memphis.
They had a huge Memphis.
That's right.
Background
at Ardent
History.
Studios. Did a lot of the more. Flashier stuff, but I'm not sure if this is one of them. This is an earlier sort of thing, and I love that blues guitar that they got in there.
More importantly, they did a lot of drinking songs.
Yes, they did, and that was one of them. We've got more coming up in shows ahead, and maybe even our audio extra that we keep talking offline about.
We are on a theme.
That's right. Beer drinking songs. As we said at the end of the last one, we encourage you now, if you got a song that you think this is a beer drinking song, either a song about drinking beer, a song you drink beer to, or after you've had enough beers, sounds like the greatest song in the world, we want to know, be it rock, country, whatever.
Pretend like you're at a dance, we're your DJs, and you're just passing up the napkins with the songs you want to hear.
That's right. Feel free to write your request on the back of any $20 bill handed up here. We'll play it.
And I think all of us podcasters are kind of hidden DJs.
There you go.
A little bit of that desire in the background. So
the name of this show was the New Holland Beer Show. Brew and Beer.
That's hard to say. New Holland Brewing Beer Show.
I'm having a hard time just getting past New Holland because I've already been hitting their beer hard.
New Holland Brewing from Michigan,
mm-hmm.
Holland, Michigan, to be more precise. And I've been chasing after these guys for a while, been in touch with Fred Biltman, and hopefully we'll get an interview with him sometime in the near future. We're coming into a holiday weekend, so we probably won't get him for this show. We'll see. We'll see how it works out.
Yeah. If we do, you'll hear it.
But I ran into these guys at the Great Taste in the Midwest, absolutely fell in love with their beer. Wrote them, told them so, you know, et cetera, et cetera. they're in the middle of this move. So they're moving into brand new facilities and trying to get their bottling lines back up online, et cetera, et cetera. So it's actually bad timing for me. They also had a big fall festival, whatnot. So Jeffrey T comes in, and he gets one of the representatives to come and do a beer show with him.
Ah.
So New Holland's already been done by Jeffrey T. And
well, there's a difference between done and done right.
Well, yeah.
So we're going to do them right.
We're going to do them Memphis style.
That's right. There you go. Yeah, okay. Yeah, let's clarify. There's right and there's Memphis style. Okay. Well, this first beer, though, that we're getting into is
Doppelbock.
And, you know, I didn't read the bottle, but I drank this and I thought, this reminds me of something. And I should have known. It's that style, that Doppel or the Bock style of beer, and this is really good. I mean, to me, I'm looking at the notes that you handed me here. The rating, what is this from? Rate Beer?
Rate Beer, yeah. They didn't get such a
53.
Hot rating.
Yeah, well, you know,
it's better than that.
Yeah, it is. I agree, 100%. It's very good, very nice. It says 7% alcohol.
Blue Goat Doppelbock is chestnut in color with nutty malt profile from its signature Munich malt. A muted hop presence and smooth caramelized body culminate in a clean, dry finish.
Okay. And, you know, the thing about it is, and this is that whole Bock thing, they got the goat going on there with their blue goat. I don't know what blue means. It says it's a tribute to the perseverance and billy goat toughness of those charged with the mission of bringing beer to the people. I didn't know you had to have billy goat toughness to bring beer to the people, but okay.
You do.
You
sure.
do?
Sure.
You have to have the toughness and stamina of a goat? Okay. So I'm sure there's something in there somewhere. Now, this is really, this is a very good beer. The more I drink of this, the more I enjoy it. And I will say, just a side note on pairings, where we've had pairings with food and things like that, I want to recommend that this goes well with a shot of Jack Daniels. Which
what doesn't go well with a shot of Jack Daniels,
well,
actually?
Gin.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
Nobody likes gin.
No, not at all. So this is really good. And this, you said, because you kind of orchestrated this whole thing. I know this is one you're wanting to do, and you kind of set this up where, okay, I'm going to go with the lowest rated. But now that's according to other people.
That's according to other people. That's
okay. Right. And this is great. So we're off to a good start.
We are. You're in for a treat when we get to the end.
All right.
This is part of the High Gravity series. There are four beers in the High Gravity series. We've got three of those. So okay. I think we're doing quite well for a show.
Now, have you got a Doppelbock in your immediate future?
Yeah. Part of the home brewing update.
Mm-hmm.
The Bourbon Oak Robust Porter has been bottled. I have the ingredients at home. I just ordered from Northern Brewer.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to try for a third time the Rogue Hazelnut Nectar. But this time I've got Pac-Man Yeast. So
okay.
I've got my hopes really
and,
high.
And I like the ones you did before. But you're being particular about it.
Yeah. The difference this time is Northern Brewer didn't have the precise malts that Rogue uses.
Right. And this is Rogue's Pac-Man Yeast, right?
Yeah. More beer did, but I didn't have time to wait for more beer. So
okay.
So I ordered substitutes for the malts, but got the exact yeast this time. So actually, it might be a good experiment to see if the yeast is more important than the precise malts that Rogue was using.
Now, is this using flavoring or actual hazelnuts?
This time I got hazelnut syrup. I've been using the hazelnut extract, and I don't feel like I've been getting a very robust hazelnut flavor out
of it. When you say syrup, like the stuff put in coffee?
Put in coffee, exactly.
Sweet. Okay.
Yeah, so
all right. Well, that will be interesting.
Technically, it is sweet, and it's full of sugar, and I'm hoping that the yeast doesn't destroy the character of the hazelnut flavor.
Okay. So we'll find out. Right?
That'll be fun. But after that, my next beer after that is a Doppelbock.
Okay.
So I got to get that laid down before Lent.
Okay. Yep. And, because it's got to age, right?
That's right.
For the spring, right?
It's a lager.
It's a spring beer.
And lagers take forever.
Okay.
So it's going to be stuck in my refrigerator or my little fermenting freezer.
Lagering unit.
For about 2 months.
Okay. Is this the one that survived the car crash?
Yes, it is.
Okay, good. Good. We're glad to hear that it's recovered and ready for duty.
That's right.
Okay. So good. And so I guess we might as well mention up front, this is going to be very brewing-focused this show is. Got a lot of information about brewing, brewing news, podcast about brewing, all kinds of good stuff, right?
Right. Yeah, and I figure that's a majority of our audience. So.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's something that we always got to make sure we address those who brew, those who drink and think about brewing. And
we'll have some food discussion.
Absolutely, yeah. No particular thing in mind, although we do have something coming up about the effect of Memphis food on non-Southern people.
I think it's important that we discuss
that. We were not required to put a warning label on these things, but maybe we ought to reconsider it. You listen later on, you be the judge.
VH1 Classic Albums. I don't know if you people are checking these out, but Bubby, he was in the real
from
Happy
the real
Hour,
happy hour yeah.
chat room. Actually, it was probably the Tiki Bar chat room. And he was talking about, you know, we were all in there listening, and this guy was playing progressive rock, and we're chatting away, and he goes, hey, have you checked out the Dark Side of the Moon DVD, which I guess is available at your finer establishment, such as Walmart.
Netflix.
I think Walmart's one.
Yeah, okay.
No, I had not checked out the DVD, but I was cruising channel surfing the other day, and I noticed that VH1 is playing these things, the classic albums, so... I tuned in, and it was Pink Floyd, Dark Side of the Moon. So I started to watch that, and it just gave me goosebumps. I mean, I've heard Dark Side of the Moon 300, 400 times.
But you watch the making of.
This is the making of the album.
Okay.
And obviously, they lay a lot of the tracks in. Alan Parsons was the audio engineer.
The engineer, yeah. Okay. And then he went and did his project. Okay.
Yeah, and then he did the Alan Parsons project. And we talked about that in the chat room also. You know, iRobot, that was one of the albums that I really got into.
But I should have been in that chat room.
Just seeing Roger Waters and David Gilmour, those two, they're gods. Yep. So.
Yeah, David Gilmour's he's a crazy guy.
Well, they're both nuts.
Yeah, they are.
David
Gilmour's like certifiable, though.
Yeah.
Him of the now I want to make sure I'm talking about the same David Gilmour. This is David Gilmour of the New York Dolls. Pink Floyd.
Oh, Pink Floyd, I know that.
Okay. Well, there's another David Gilmour.
Oh, okay.
I'm not sure. It might be the same one. I've had a beer. Actually, I've had two.
Oh, we also have an errata from our last show. We need to do a little
Okay. What did we screw up?
The French-Indian War.
Oh, was it not?
It was. We did not sit out as idle bypass or bystanders watching the French fight the Indians. It actually was a war between the French and the British, and it was before the United States was even founded.
Well, how's that? Okay, but that
wasn't
us.
Before the Revolution.
That was them. Okay, and yeah, you sent me that thing about Daniel Day-Lewis.
Well, yeah, he was in it.
Longstocking.
Yeah.
Right? That's about that war. And those damned Iroquois.
Well, you know, Daniel Day-Lewis and Madeline Stowe, they were hanging out with the last the Mohicans.
The last of the Mohicans. That's right. Yeah. Not long.
So this is how it happened.
Okay.
In real life.
In real life.
Yeah.
Okay.
And they were good looking like that, too.
They looked exactly like that?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
They weren't short, squat, and brutish.
What was the guy's name?
Daniel Day-Lewis?
Yeah. What was his name in there? Wasn't it Longfellow or Longstocking or...
Something having to do stocking. With sharp shooting.
Okay.
Something like that, because he was...
That was a cool movie.
Quite the marksman.
So. Okay. So you're
Actually,
telling me,
I
though...
I saw that, and I didn't
okay,
write it down.
Okay, so I screwed up by saying that was when we sat out and watched?
Yeah, we were actually still colonies, and we weren't quite a country yet, so we didn't sit out.
But did we participate, or was it the British?
The British, but they also had the colonials fighting for them.
Okay. Were we made to do it?
I'm certain. Except for Daniel Day-Lewis.
All right. I just want to check. I want to make, you know, get our historical facts right. Okay. Well.
So that was our errata.
Okay. And we're entitled to make mistakes, and this is one of those rare occasions when I guess we're admitting it, right?
Normally we just ignore it.
All right. Well, we're going to play the song here that I was playing for you earlier, and this is a chance for you to just kind of relax a little and listen. This has got a Memphis connection, and this is like a predecessor to rap music. It's a storytelling sort of song.
It's a good song.
It's a good song. It's about beer. It's about drinking. It's about women. You can't go wrong there, could you? All right, take a listen.
The story is true, ladies and gentlemen. Only the names have been changed to protect the innocent. The year 1940, the city in Chicago, the place Ruby's Tavern. The story goes something like this. I walked into a beer tavern to give a girl a nice time. I had $45 when I entered. When I left, I only had one dime. Wasn't she a beer-drinking woman? Don't you know, man, don't you know? She was a beer-drinking woman, and I don't want to see her no more. Now when I spent down to my last dime, she said, darling, I know you're not through. I said, yes, baby, doll, and the trophy belongs to you. Once you're a beer-drinking woman, don't you know, man, don't you know? She was a beer-drinking woman, and I don't want to see her no more. She'd often say, excuse me a minute, I've got to step around here. And every time she came back, she had room for another quarter beer. Wasn't that a beer-drinking woman? Don't you know, man, don't you know? She was a beer-drinking woman, and I don't want to see her no more.
So that was Memphis Slim.
Yep.
And you were saying a little bit more about that.
He's a piano blues guy. That's why you heard that. And I was saying this is kind of like a predecessor to rap because it's storytelling, which is all rap is, right? Actually, rap storytelling originally was a political message about repression stuff, whereas Memphis Slim was just telling a story about getting drunk, spending all his money on a beer-drinking woman.
I can't really say that I've been spending a lot of money on beer drinking women, but there are nights I've gone out with what I considered a good amount of money for an evening out and come back with a dime in my pocket.
That's what he said. Went out with $50, came back with one thin dime. Memphis Slim, earlier blues artist, and as I was remarking to you, the Big Foamy Head Connection, one of our earlier shows, where today's music came from, and one of the big guys behind all this, Willie Dixon, he was the guy playing bass on this. And Memphis Slim, I know, was a big hit in Europe and in Paris. And if I'm not mistaken, we'll have to verify this. This is another opportunity for us to get facts wrong. I believe
we make up facts.
He
all the time.
Spent his final days in Paris, if I'm not mistaken. We'll check. We'll find out. In the meantime, believe it or not. So
same as the who's the lady with the legs.
The lady with the legs?
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure they're all equipped with legs, except for Heather McCartney. But I digress.
Whoa, that was cold.
Well, I'm just aggravated at her.
You know, live from Thunderdome. Come on.
It's Tina Turner?
Yeah, I like Turner. Tina Turner, she's living in France these days.
Well, you know, her husband was from here. I think from Mississippi. Yeah, Ike Turner.
Right.
Yeah.
No longer her husband. No.
Recorded at Stax.
That's right. Yeah. They're a big part of the scene around here.
If you look hard enough, you can trace everything back to Memphis.
That's right.
I don't care what the hell it is.
We're the epicenter.
We are it, the cosmos, the armpit of the universe.
All right. Black Tulip Triple Ale. All right. New Holland Brewing. Black Tulip is golden in color with a slightly sweet body. Its ester-laden character reveals an enigmatic dance between Belgian ale yeast and candy sugar that conjures hints of bananas and rock candy. A pleasing dry finish complements its inviting flavor. 71 on ratebeer.com.
Okay, now, you said bananas, and I thought that was more a signature of, like, wheat beers. I'm not getting bananas, but I am getting that whole Belgian taste, and I got to tell you something.
I'm getting huge spice.
Oh, yeah, a real huge spice. Okay, so this is a Belgian triple ale, Belgian style, correct?
9% alcohol by volume.
Good, always good.
Always
good when you get into the bigger numbers. But this is the thing. It's a very tasty, spicy beer. But this is the thing. You remember a while back when we were doing all the Belgian Abbeys, and I was all excited. I had one of them, and I can't remember if it was Westvale or Westmall or one of them, and it was a triple.
Tasted like dirt.
It was horrible.
That was the 8, Westmall 8.
Was that the one? Okay, so you remember. It made such an impression. It was so bad. And that just screwed me for triples. I've been, like, almost gun-shy.
Yeah.
This is great.
This is great. It's
Okay, well, I'm glad.
It's definitely very highly spiced. It's kind of a,
you can taste
a golden amber in color. The little bubbles are bubbling up. And we had some kind
very
of
good.
It almost looks like a soap residue in the bottle.
Yeah, you were commenting on that. We saw that in the Blue Goat. We're seeing it in this, and you thought maybe it was cleanser or something. There's these giant bubbles in the bottle.
I know that if you wash bottles out with Star Sand or something, you can immediately fill them up.
Okay.
There's a little bit of residue left over, but you can certainly.
So you got to assume
it's tasteless.
You got to assume this is a commercially bottled thing. So whatever this
is. Yeah, there's
a
whole story about their bottling line if you're interested.
Well, I'm reading here on the back of where this thing, why is it called Black Tulip? And it says, since the early 1600s, the Dutch have attempted to breed a pure black tulip. Okay, we tried to go to the moon. They tried to breed a pure black tulip. Many have tried. A few have come close, but none have succeeded. In honor of this elusive flavor, the holy grail of the tulip world, we offer a special brew, Black Tulip Triple. This has all the makings of a movie of the week.
It does.
Search
it does.
For the Black Tulip. I know there was
that
Black Dahlia.
What was the movie quote you were going to do?
About Austin Powers, and the internet connection is failing, so I'm paraphrasing about we should be tolerant of people of all colors, religions, and creeds, except for the damn Dutch. I can't remember what it is. We'll have to look it up. But this is funny as hell about Michael Caine, Austin Powers' dad. He hated the Dutch.
Yeah.
But we love the Dutch,
you know,
especially the New Hollanders.
The New Hollanders.
The New Dutchers. Yes, we do.
I'm always trying to teach my children tolerance and you know, all that for the races. And I go, except for the Guatemalans.
That's right.
I have absolutely nothing against Guatemalans, although they seem like a good people to pick on.
There you go.
You know, yeah, you really don't know too many Guatemalans, so you can always, like,
you don't run across them every day, do you?
So the bottling line was first put to work in the early 1960s.
Now, this is in Holland, Michigan?
Their new facility expansion.
Okay.
I think they got a new bottling line.
Okay.
But it was, its previous homes were La Trobe Brewing Company. Mm-hmm. Sierra Nevada Brewing in Chico, and most recently Summit Brewing in St. Paul, Minnesota.
Now, is this the equipment or the people, too? You said the bottling line.
I assume it's the bottling equipment.
Okay. So what you're telling me then is that they've got this, like, third hand at a really good price?
It's been around since the 60s. Okay. Bottling lines are very expensive.
Maybe that explains the bubbles.
So for your average craft brewing company, that's why a lot of them do not bottle.
Yeah,
I've
heard
really
that about how just cost prohibitive. It's like extremely expensive to do full large scale, right?
That's why there's also a lot of contract brewing going on.
Okay. Well, so this is very good stuff.
Yeah, good job, guys.
Black Tulip Triple Ale. And I know you don't have the BJCP guidelines in front of you. I'm shocked at that, by the way. But the triple style represents Is it the number of fermentations? Is it the, or is it just a, yet another word?
It's yet another word. It's like double,
but
double
is double, right? But does it not mean
roughly double? It doesn't mean it's double the strength or any of that.
Is it not double something? It's something. Triple. It's triple. There's three somethings.
That just means it's stronger, I believe.
And I'm all for that.
Or but, maybe it just means it's like the third or something.
Okay. Well, it's very good. And so I know you're looking this up and trying, because you're going to hunt this down until you
Well, no, I actually have the BJCP on my desktop. So,
okay.
All right. What do you want to know about it? Strong, resembles a golden ale, but slightly darker and somewhat fuller body. Okay. Originally developed at the Trappist Monastery at West Mall. High in alcohol, but it does not taste strongly of alcohol. The best examples are sneaky, not obvious. High carbonation helps bring out the many flavors and to increase the perception of a dry finish.
Okay. All right. Well, I think that's good, and except for the fact that West Mall...
Eight tastes like dirt.
Yeah, it did. It sucked. I mean, I hate hearing that, that and having tasted that, that if that's used as a representative sample, maybe we got a bad bottle. Who knows? But we got a really good bottle.
No, I've heard other people say the same thing.
We got a good bottle of the Black Tulip.
So the flavor is a marriage of spicy, fruity, and alcohol flavors supported by a soft malt character. Mm-hmm. Low to moderate phenols are peppery in character. Esters are reminiscent of citrus fruits such as orange and sometimes lemon.
But not banana.
No nanners.
They're claiming nanners. I don't get that. And esters to me sounds like a bad word. That makes me think of alcohol. I mean, like rubbing alcohol. But it's not.
It's not. It's a
flavor.
It's a BJCP word.
Okay. So, well, I've heard
that
it
we know.
Maybe I'm thinking of ethyl alcohol. That's gasoline, right? Or something like that.
Ethanol?
Okay.
Esters? I don't know. All right. So anyway...
How about those podcasts?
Got a new podcast to recommend to you guys. It's not new. He's been around forever. He's
new to
the
us.
The old man of podcasting, but he's new to us. The Brew Bubbas kind of got me interested in listening to this guy, and I did. Normally, I don't listen to international podcasts. Mm-hmm. Graham Sanders, Craft Brewer Radio from Australia.
Right. And what was this thing that you observed about him that really impressed you?
Well, you know how we're all in high school and we can do the Monty Python impressions maybe we can do a Monty Python skit or two and we can mimic the accent pretty well.
Yeah.
This guy does it all the time.
Really?
Yeah.
He's like learned to do his whole podcast in that sort of accent.
That British type of accent. So he does that the whole time. I think that's pretty amazing.
The whole no one expects a Spanish Inquisition.
Yeah. No one expects a Spanish Inquisition.
Man, that was eerie. That was like dead on.
Yeah, right.
I felt like I was watching.
You know, I actually have that audio bit saved to my desktop.
Okay. Well, maybe we'll dub that in.
So he's got some audio posted from December 2003. Looks like he started consistently posting shows in June of 2005, which is about a month before we started.
Okay.
Really pumping out our shows. Great guy. Seems to...
Know his stuff.
Yeah, he's got a really good brewing show. It's very much brewing oriented, craft brewer industry.
And we've heard some of these guys from Australia. They're pretty hardcore brewers. I mean, they seem to be.
They must be kind of like us Memphis people, where we're limited in the number of commercial beers we can get. So they have to brew their own.
Well, of course, you know, they were originally a penal colony.
That's right.
And in prison,
and we should never let them forget that.
You learn to make. You learn to make your wine in the toilet when the warden isn't looking. So I'm sure that any way that they can make alcohol, they're going to really go at it with a vengeance. So, and since they were, I don't know how they got their freedom. I'm kind of not up on my Australian history.
Let's make something up. The Australian Revolution.
Yeah, during the Australian Revolution, where they fought the Iroquois, who were shipped to Australia.
And those damn French.
By the French, yeah. As a result, that was where the Iroquois went. And then they later became the natives that populate the outback of Australia. Right?
And then became Aborigines.
Aborigines and Iroquois, completely interchangeable.
Absolutely.
They're exactly the same person.
So anyway, his shows are well-paced. They're about an hour and a half long, and he talks about topics such as hot cideration, kind of makes fun of Americans and our obsession with new beer styles. That was a pretty good show. I kind of had to laugh about that because we're always creating new styles.
What's our new style?
Like
the Cider Pop beer stuff that we did, like Zima's?
Well, every third day there's a new style. It's like, okay, we got a triple IPA now.
Okay.
You know, a quadruple IPA.
Well, that's what makes this country great.
A super duper triple.
That's why we're the superpower. We got the bomb, baby. We make up as many beer styles as we like. We are the only
It's sort of silly, and it's also redundant because other parts of the world have already done it. So
I know. You're right. We're actually a kid.
The one thing I don't like about a show is they've got some bizarre measurements over there. They're not using ounces and pints and quarts and things like we do.
They insist on continuing to use that metric thing.
Yeah, what is that thing?
What's up with that?
Who uses that? What is a deciliter anyways? I mean,
it's 10 or 12. I don't know.
In 20 centigrade, it's what, about 500 degrees?
I don't know. We're just really just putting our ignorance on display for everybody to see.
Just having some fun.
Okay.
Just having some fun.
And we are, but we got to, okay, speaking of podcasts, we have to make sure not to mention James Spencer on this show. Because James Spencer from Basic Brewing Radio, although he sent you a wonderful selection of homebrews and a prized bottle
of La Folie from New Belgium.
We're not going to talk about him.
That's right, because he said we shouldn't put him on the show. We didn't have to do his beers on the show. So.
And we don't pander to him. We don't talk to him offline, despite the emails and the phone calls and stuff. You know,
James Spencer, great guy. Thank you very much for the La Folie. Yeah. I heard your show where you were interviewing Peter Bouquert, whatever,
okay,
and how he was railing against having no styles at all. And
he's railing against having styles?
You ask him what style he's brewing, and he goes nuts on you.
Beer style?
Not nuts, but...
Oh, come on.
He would be the anti...
It's just looking for a handle to
he's
put
on. He's the anti-style guy.
Yeah, okay, well, good.
What he brews is his art, and you don't label it. And
okay, fine.
I get you. I understand.
Fine, that's good. But I personally like to, and I'm really looking forward to this La Folie, because I love the sour beers.
Jeff and Greg from Craft Beer Radio were trying it the other day. They did a sour beer show, and they were just going nuts over it.
Well, you know, I told you about my trip to in Seattle, the Stumbling Monk. Man, sour beers everywhere. It was great. So even though we're not mentioning James Spencer on this show.
Thank you very much, James.
Yeah. But we're not going to say that.
Yeah, I'm actually a neophyte as far as the sour beers go. I've never had one.
Well,
I've forgotten. I was in a drunken stupor or something. I don't know.
I've had the New Glarus one, the Unplugged. We had that, and then I brought another one back. But there's just not that many. There's so few. So I really appreciate it. And it is one of those things that I know on the tasting notes, sometimes it's referred to as horsey.
Yeah, horse blanket.
And sweat.
Yeah, you get strange.
Okay. Well, luckily, I haven't gotten it. All right. Well, we're getting a little long in this segment. So when we come back, we got to talk about our pals and your extremely close friends.
We'll do that next segment.
The Dude Night. Yeah. So we're going to talk about the
music
next segment.
Coming up.
We are continuing in our vein of beer drinking songs. Take a listen. If you don't know this, you should. Of course, this is one. I'll tell you what I'm going to play. And to me, this was a sort of local beer drinking song. And this is a guy, he's still here in town, fantastic writer, songwriter, singer, performer, still performs this. This is one that he got national play during the 80s for this song, and it's kind of like an anthem song about... Well, you just take a listen.
I'm intrigued.
All right, you'll hear it.
What's coming up?
I'm not strange, I'm just like you.
I'm not strange, just like you. I like to do what normal people do. Comb my hair, wash my face, and keep my necktie in this place. And I'm not strange, I'm just like you. Same frustrations too.
So that was my boy, Keith Sykes, homeboy. And actually, he's now moved way up the street from us here in Collierville. He's moved even further out, Eads, Tennessee.
Oh, is he? Okay.
But I got to tell you,
big homes out there.
Keith has been around and been on the Memphis scene for 20-something years. That was from an album that he released in the 80s, the album of the same name, I'm Not Strange. That was an anthem here. I mean, you couldn't play that in a bar without the crowd just going nuts, holding up their drinks, singing along. All of the kind of like musical interludes in there, the crowd would be screaming, just going nuts for this, right? And Keith,
kind of like Rocky Horror Picture Show at a bar.
Yeah, oh yeah, but I mean, it's just the music. Memphis was a really huge music scene during the 70s and 80s, and Keith did not do new wave. He did his own thing. So you got to think, this is like the Cars and New Wave and stuff. And although he was wearing parachute pants on the cover of this album, he just did his own things. And I got to tell you, you don't know this, but you've probably heard many of Keith's songs as sung by Jimmy Buffett, Jeff Walker, Rodney Crowell. He's kind of the country, blues, folk segment of the population. That he writes, and he's a very prolific and well-respected writer in the music community, and hopefully we'll have him on the show one day. But this is a song that kind of summarizes Memphis back then, getting drunk, getting, seeing how fast your car will go, getting in, don't start nothing you can't finish. You know, that was a real anthem, and it got national airplay for a few weeks, I'm sure. And, you know, anyway, I love that song. I've been wanting to play it for a while. So there you go. That's my local drinking song.
Well, if he's out in Eads, that's where some of the bigger homes are. So,
yeah, well, you know, he had a studio. I think he still has a studio here out in Raleigh that called the Woodshed. But he's still very, very prominent music scene, does songwriters and stuff. So we'll have to call him, get him on the show.
You know, you go to Laguna Beach and you're looking at your average million-dollar home.
Yeah.
2,000 square feet, maybe. Yeah. Maybe has a garage, one-car garage.
Yeah.
You know, maybe has 5 feet on the side of the building.
Yeah. The little, not a zero lot, but damn close.
Yeah, you come out to Eads, Tennessee, and you have $1 million home, and it looks like a castle.
On how many acres?
Yeah, on 5 acres usually, and with horses and whatnot.
Beautiful. Beautiful places and stuff. So anyway, that was Keith. Hopefully we'll get a little more of him. Now, we were going to talk. We're preparing, and I'm behind you here. I got to knock mine out. But we were going to talk about the Dude Knight, our boys at the Dude Knight who, I mean, Clark. I got to tell you, wonderful people.
Believe it or not, and some people may not like being called boy.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, that's a term of, that's a term of endearment here.
Okay. But some people take high offense to that, but you may not have known that.
No.
All right.
Okay.
Well, so our good friends over at Dude Knight.
Gonzo, Hog Dog,
and Clark.
And Clark is very supportive of us. We appreciate it. They treated you. They could not have treated you better when you came out.
Absolutely fantastic hosts.
And that's right. So just to show your appreciation, you made them a little care package, little Memphis flavor, and sent it up there with some of your home brews and some rubs. That threw them right off the bat. And, you know, but like, okay.
Three of our standards. Well, two standards and one that I think is an up and coming.
The Dancing Pig one?
Yeah, the Dancing Pigs. That's
and
the barbecue shop.
Well, and if the word rub, this is what I found out because I was talking to somebody today about this. It means different things to people. They go, what do you mean a rub?
You rub your meat.
And there's the other. Yeah, you rub your meat. And they go, what are you talking about? It's like, it's spices. You put it on the piece of meat you're cooking. They were getting all kinds of the wrong ideas. So the boys. Sorry, you know, I'm from, you know where I'm from, right?
Yes, I do.
Okay. So the fellows at Dude Knight got this, and I don't, who was it, Clark cooking this? But anyway.
It was Hog Dog who did.
Hog Dog,
well, actually,
cooking?
Somebody, there was a pork roast that they cut up in small chunks.
Okay.
And
they taste tested.
I think it was a shared task.
They taste tested. Listen to their. Take a visit to our friends at Dude Knight, episode 18.
You take some Southern Californians, give them a little bit of Southern spice.
They go nuts.
And let's see what
okay,
happens.
Okay, so we got it. I pulled this clip because I couldn't believe it. I thought, oh, my God, I hope this isn't permanent, that what you did to them.
I think it's temporary.
Okay, well, hopefully it'll wear off in a little bit.
The effects of dry rub.
Right. So here's a clip of Clark, Hog Dog, and Gonzo. Opening of their show, pre-rub.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
Now, we had this when he visited us in, for the stone thing.
That's really good.
That's
very nice. Yep.
Good job.
Yeah, I like that smokiness on the finish.
Now, I haven't had very many Roush beers, so.
Ow.
So, that's these three guys. They're together. They're talking pre-dry rub.
Right. This is at the earlier part of the show where they're drinking, starting to be sample some of your beer.
Yeah.
Very appreciative. And then, as the show goes on, they've had a few of your beers. They really enjoyed your smoked beer, which is very good.
And then they bring out the pork.
They bring out the pork. And they were cooking this, and what they did was they took your three samples, Corky's, Dancing Pigs,
and
Rendezvous, which apparently Gonzo, being the European of the bunch, had to pronounce Charlie Virgo's name and Rendezvous, and apparently he put some... He said it in a much more delicate way than we did. We go, yes, Charlie Virgos, the Rendezvous. And he probably pronounced it correctly.
Which, yeah, I'm sure he did.
Which none of the 1.2 million people here in Memphis are able to do. But anyway, they sampled the rubs, and by the third taste, I mean, the first one, the Corkies, they were like going, as it progressively, they enjoyed it more and more and more. And by the third one, they were devastated.
Let's hear their effects.
Say, hey, we're taking your rub. We're trying out your rub right now.
Yeah.
Wondering how you like the rub.
Can we get the number of that pig?
Yeah.
Well, there you go. That's what happens. You expose some non-Southern individuals to pure... Uncut, no, you didn't step on this rub at all. This is hardcore. They mainlined this stuff, and look what happened.
That's right.
And you told me, though, you're pretty sure this is
immediately
temporary.
Immediately picked up a Southern accent.
Immediately, and wanted to get up and start drunk dialing. They probably went out and got into a fight in a bar later. There's just no telling.
Driving around with a dog and a shotgun.
There you go, hanging out the window, the dog too.
wearing camouflage.
There you go. They addressed their inner redneck.
There you go.
That's what they did. And, well, boys, we hope you had a good time. Yes, I said, boy. Okay.
All right.
So we're back. And
New Holland Dragon's Milk is our third beer.
You told me Dragon's Milk because, now, just so you know, we're enjoying, we're doing this a little Southern style.
A Tennessee product.
A Tennessee product, just as a palate cleanser of sorts. A little Jack Daniel's Old Number 7. And
that'd be the Tennessee Sour Mash Whiskey.
There you go. And there's
much better than gin.
There's some, yeah, oh yeah, God, gin. Oh my God, who would drink gin?
Who would go out and pick berries off a pine tree and put it in a drink?
Yeah, limp wristed, butt twitching flip boys. That's all I got to say about gin. So we were talking though offline about this kind of marriage made in heaven between bourbon and beer. The flavors just really go together.
The Boilermaker.
The Boilermaker. Okay, even the perfect. Really, the worst
That's
beer.
Old school.
There you go.
Dropping a shot of whiskey and
chugging. Yeah, slam your beer back. But there's just something about if you got some nice bourbon and a nice beer, it's just fantastic. We've had the bourbon from the Allagash Curious, one of our anniversary beers. We have had some at the event that we went to.
I've had them at various tastings.
The St. Mary's Beer Fest, and mm-hmm. I'm looking at my little glass here.
Even Anheuser-Busch is jumping on the wagon with their oak cask.
Exactly. So we know that bourbon and beer go well together, and so our last New Holland beer that we have.
New Holland Dragon's Milk. This is one of my favorite beers. Mm-hmm. Expect a complex ale with a soft, rich caramel malt character intermingled with deep vanilla tones, all dancing in an oak bath.
Mm-hmm.
Unmistakably distinctive and hauntingly remarkable, Dragon's Milk is a perfect example of New Holland's art and fermented form.
Mm, good stuff.
And 92 unrate beer, underrated.
92?
Underrated.
Okay.
It's an English strong ale brewed by New Holland Brewing Company. 9% alcohol by volume.
Now, it doesn't say bourbon on here. You said vanilla and oak. But it has, that is the flavors that you get with bourbon.
Yeah.
That's some of the complexities of bourbon. And I'm looking at the kind of prelude.
I was kind of staying away from their flowery marketing speak. But
about the beer you hold in your hand.
We could tell you, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah,
okay. We could tell you about the centuries-old tradition.
Okay, what does it say? Centuries-old tradition of the term dragon's milk. We could tell you about the history, craftsmanship, and challenges of barrel-aging beer, especially in reclaimed bourbon barrels. We'd rather tell you what's more important, the beer that's inside this bottle. Well, okay, that's good. But, I mean, we know we like the bourbon. You got one going into the can. I mean, bourbon and beer. Good mm-hmm. stuff, man. Can't go wrong. So we're enjoying this, and just to make sure we're getting enough bourbon, we've got our Jack Daniels by our side, as our friends at ZZ Top would say. So good stuff. Man, this Dragon's Milk.
What do you think?
Oh, man,
I've had this before.
Fantastic. And I want to say that...
I've actually had some other friends try it, and they are going to make a special trip to stop in Holland, Michigan, to go to the New Holland Brewery.
It's great.
Just to get some more of this stuff.
But this type, though, is an English strong ale. And I don't know what the others that we had were. The
Belgian Allagash, Triple, obviously.
No. I mean the bourbon/beer types. The Allagash Triple. Now you got me doing it. The Allagash Curious. I don't know what style that was without going back. But the one that you're doing, the bourbon beer you're doing, is
a robust
porter.
Yeah.
Okay. So bourbon goes, mixes with...
The dark malty beers.
Multiple styles, mm-hmm. right? Okay, so you see this as more accompanying more maltier versus hoppier beers.
Right, yes.
And I can see that. Okay,
the darker, more chocolatey.
It's a little sweet. Yeah. Okay, good stuff. So this is something that maybe would be an interesting kind of side-by-side comparison, if we can lay our hands on some others, is the bourbon-style beers. You're doing a porter. This mm-hmm. is a strong ale, and just kind of look at how they play out in their different incarnations. So, obviously, as a flavoring for beer, bourbons well respected. There's no gin
Founders, beer. Founders, Kentucky Breakfast. Yeah.
There's no Man, gin beer.
Good stuff.
Other than tequila, there's no tequila beer. There's no vodka beer. Bourbon.
A lot of bourbon beer.
Bourbon beer. There you go. Mm-hmm. Okay. What else we got?
Well, tomorrow is Thanksgiving.
Tomorrow's Thanksgiving. We haven't mentioned the holiday because we try to be time sensitive to this. So this will be about a week and a half after the main event. And what do you got planned?
I'm smoking a turkey. And yeah. Then
kind of hard to keep that lit. You have to keep like sucking on it real hard or
Yeah, roll it up and you smoke it.
There you go. You have to get those extra large rolling papers, right?
I got a 10-pound bird I'm going to throw into my smoker. Mm-hmm. Do some hickory and probably some applewood.
How long does it take? Hour
about
a pound?
About 6 hours is what they're...
Really?
Yeah, 5 to 6 hours. I don't know if I trust that absolutely.
I know with pork it's like 180.
Is 180 for the bird also.
Really?
You put it obviously into the to the chest or to the thigh.
Do you stuff the thing if you're smoking it?
No, absolutely not.
All right.
You know how you fry a turkey? They give you those little stanchions that you drop into the oil.
I got three turkey fryers.
Yeah, and you know the little stanchion with the handle that you drop into the oil? Yeah. What I do is I put my bird on top of that thing.
Okay.
Yeah,
set it in your smoker so it doesn't fall.
Yeah, and
over.
Then I stick it in my smoker.
Very
with a little
good idea.
Tray underneath it.
Well, we
I
got
also
our...
brine it prior to the.
Oh no, that's good. So it's going to be very moist.
Yeah, and if you're actually interested in, I think Barbecue Bob and his Beer Bash, and Barbecue Show, whatever you call it,
Barbecue Bob's Beer and Barbecue Bash or something.
He did a video series where he fried and smoked a turkey. He's got a good brine recipe. He's got a good method. Go ahead and check that out if you're interested in seeing the process.
Well, I fry turkeys every year. I mentioned I've got three of these things. I have this as a side result of my children winning the chili contest. For some reason, when you win a chili contest, they give you a turkey fryer. I don't know why.
Well, that's a good reason to sign your kids up.
Yes. So we have three because my kids are champions in chili cooking.
Good Daddy, line of breeding there.
Daddy isn't.
Good line of breeding.
They get that from their grandmother. But anyway, and of course, as you know, it's good for making beer, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not doing it this year. This is the first year that I can remember where I'm not cooking anything. I'm taking the year off. I'm cooking
a little surprised, actually, because I know you like to cook.
Yeah, I know. I'm not doing anything. I intend to get up.
So what'd you do? Call mom and say, "Mom, we're coming
over?" No, no. She told me, well, yeah, we're going over there, but I usually bring a fried turkey. The turkey, right? No, just didn't work out that way. She said, "Just come over. Somebody else is doing this." So I don't think my role has been replaced in the family tradition. It's just I'm taking a year off.
Well, if you want to get your spot back,
yeah,
smoke a turkey.
Well, and I love
you'll be back in mom's favor.
I love smoked turkey.
Mom will be saying,
"I don't think she kicked me out.
Are you going to smoke a turkey this year?"
I don't think she kicked me out.
Yeah, you've been booted to the curb, buddy. Yeah, I hate to say it.
Well, now see, now you've got me questioning my relationship with my mother. and I've got a
mom
bottle of bourbon in front of me.
Mom doesn't want another fried turkey.
You've set me up for a fall.
No.
Okay. So what else you got going on, though? You've got, and as all Americans sit down to Thanksgiving, several things occur. You watch parades in the morning, or at least you turn them on for the kids to watch. Somebody in the
Macy's
house is going to watch
Macy's Day Parade.
Them. Okay. You do that. Then you prepare to go to the family dinner. Hopefully you have a cocktail or three or seven. Then you eat far too much, and then you pass out in front of the chair. Now, that's typical for most people. Other people, though, inject a little bit of annual sports competition, regardless of size, shape, color, creed, or physical condition. Once a year, they'll get out there and put themselves on the line, and you're no exception to this.
This year, I'm going to, once again, go hang out with the Susan and Jamie, the Beer Babes, and their clan, and play a little bit of flag football, bright and early in the morning. So,
and at the crack of 9,
if I keel over with a heart palpitations or something.
And are they going to bring?
You'll know I died happy.
They're going to bring the defibrillator, just in case. Okay.
And, I know, and I got to get up bright and early and fire up the smoker.
And so, my family is going to do, well, only three of us this year are going to do the turkey trot.
Which is?
4-mile run at the Shelby Farms, which is sort of like, it's a park, but it's it has some off-road, some on-road, and we run 4 miles. And if you didn't want to run that, they have this interesting thing called the turkey leg relay, where you take a drumstick and they attach the little running chip that they attach to your shoe. They put it on the turkey leg. And you hand a raw turkey leg off to your teammates. So if you can't run 4 miles, you like space your teammates out as however far apart you want and run and hand the raw turkey leg to the next one.
So you can spread salmonella with
joy. Sure, to many people.
As a festive occasion.
There you go. Right.
Here, have some raw poultry.
Nothing celebrates our murdering the Indians and screwing them out of their land than salmonella.
Right.
Of course. It's the Thanksgiving disease. Spread the cheer.
I think I'd rather play some flag football.
Well, and I'm coming
down
there.
Then run around with a raw turkey leg.
I'm coming down there because our events occur at the same time.
Yeah.
So afterwards, I'm coming down, and we'll administer beer to the wounded and injured. So that's my role in the whole flag football thing. Did you go buy your cleats?
Yes, I did.
Did you?
I went to Soccer USA.
Oh, you did. You went to the big store. You didn't go to the cheap Walmart. Okay. Did you spend over $10?
Yes, I did. For something I'm going to wear once a year.
Once a year. But you'll get many years' usage out of that.
Right. That's right. Because my feet have stopped growing, at least.
We hope.
Certainly. Okay. Anyway, so soccer cleats are kind of pricey. But
yeah.
Anyway, back to the turkey. So okay. I'm going to brine it for about 2 hours. Nice salt.
Garlic.
Actually, I like a...
garlic and fresh rosemary, you say.
Yeah, I dissolve the salt to the saturation point. You know, water gets saturated to the point where salt will no longer dissolve it. So
your brine, is it a sugar and salt?
It hasn't been in the past. I might, though.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Because that's my understanding. I've only done one brine.
I brine everything.
Well, I know you do. You did your ribs that once, mm-hmm. right? But my understanding of brine is parts sugar, parts salt.
Mm-hmm.
The idea is to break down the proteins in the meat, rendering it even more tender, right?
Yeah.
Just
like the smoke and salt flavor.
Okay, so you're doing, and also for flavor, but it also makes the meat more tender, right?
Yes.
Okay, so you brined it overnight?
No, I'm not going to do it overnight, just a couple of hours.
Okay, all right.
So, I don't want it to get too salty. All right. Yeah. Some people do it overnight.
Okay.
You know.
And I know that salt is, in cooking, does a different effect prior to cooking versus dashing it on your food afterwards. It doesn't really give a salty flavor.
No, you hardly get any salty taste.
It gives
it,
okay. All right. And then how long? You said
about 6 hours on the smoker. It gets up to 180 degrees. I'm going to inject it with seasoned oil, which has a little bit of garlic
what kind of
and rosemary.
Are you cooking this at to get it to that heat?
225 plus.
And it gets up that high that quick, huh?
Oh, over time, yeah.
Okay. Well, I guess because the cavity in there or something, bones heat up a little bit.
Well, I mean, you put a 50-degree turkey in 225 degrees, temperature differentials eventually even out.
Well, yeah.
So the turkey matches the
I just know with the pork butt, it takes forever and a day to get
the bird's not that bad.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. And it's I'm reading here. You also inject it with a seasoned oil.
Yeah.
Garlic and rosemary. So are you like soaking fresh herbs in an oil to inject?
I stick it in the microwave.
Cool. All right.
You know,
good.
And warm it up.
Okay. So. Stick the meat thermometer in, and there you go, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So Turkey Day coming up. I guess on the next show we'll have reports on whether we lived or not. And it could be. It very well could be that between now and the next show we produce our audio extra. This is my little project, Drinking Songs. Want to throw out another plug one more time. I need to hear. What are your drinking songs? Are they songs about drinking, beer, what have you? Songs that you drink beer too, because they inspire you, or they put you in that special place where alcohol just really accentuates it, or those songs that could not sound better once you've had several cocktails or 12 or 40 ounces in you, right? That's a drinking song.
It takes a lot of words to describe it, but people know what we're talking about.
It does. Well, you know, drinking songs have different meanings.
Yeah.
You know, some people think, oh, it's about drinking. No, well, it's, and so I've narrowed it down to those three things. And that's my interpretation. If anybody's got anything different.
Kind of like the perfect country song.
Okay. Well, you just, what a clever segue you just did. To so we'll listen to the show on that and finish off our Dragon's Milk. An exceptional
wonderful beer, Fred.
Beer.
Fred from New Holland Brewing. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Very good.
We'll catch up with you soon.
And I know this is one, something that you were dying to get this show done because it's such good beer. And nothing but praise, homage, kudos. And we all face Holland, Michigan and bow down.
That's right.
At least for this week. And it is very good. Very good. Fantastic beers. I love this. Seeing somebody that put so much effort into their art, and it's like the next beer, you think, oh my God, is it going to be better than the next one? And what do you know? It is.
Yeah.
And so, this is everything you said and more. Fantastic beers, fantastic brewery. Fred,
thank you.
Good job. Good job. Don't get hit by a car. Good stuff. And see you next time.
Drive safe.
Well, it was all that I could do. Keep from crying. Sometimes it seems so useless to remain, but you don't have to call me darling, darling. You never even call me by my name. You don't have to call me Waylon Jennings, and you don't have to call me Charlie Price, and you don't have to call me Merle Haggard anymore. Even though you're on my fighting side, and I'll hang around as long as you will let me, and I never minded standing in the rain, but you don't have to call. Never even call me by my name. Well, I've heard my name a few times in your phone book.
Hello.
And I've seen it on signs where I play. But the only time David Allen Cole is when Jesus has his final judgment day. So I'll hang around as long as you will let me, and I never minded standing in the rain. You don't have to call me darling, darling. You never even call me by my name. Well, a friend of mine named Steve Goodman wrote that song, and he told me it was the perfect country and western song. I wrote him back a letter and I told him it was not the perfect country and western song because he hadn't said anything at all about mama. or trains, or trucks, or prison, or getting drunk. Well, he sat down and wrote another verse to the song, and he sent it to me, and after reading it, I realized that my friend had written the perfect country and western song, and I felt obliged to include it on this album. The last verse goes like this here. Well, I was drunk the day my mom got out of prison, and I went to pick her up in the rain. But before I could get to the station in the pickup truck, she got